We are a nation that has a government, not the other way around. And this makes us special among the nations of the earth.
Enter a new dimension of political talk.
Indeed, I did have a relationship with Ms. Lewinsky that was not appropriate. In fact, it was wrong.
We will make no distinction between the terrorists who committed these acts and those who harbored them.
Current events, politics, entertainment. The Current Podcast is on now.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to this episode of The Current, episode number 96, May 17th, 2008. I'm Jacob Bodner.
I am Logan Sparrow.
Hope you all had a wonderful week.
Wunderbar.
Yes, it's been a really good week.
Yeah, I think so.
It's been a nice week.
Not too bad.
You know, I was looking at weather.com today, and we have a frost advisory here in Saline.
Really? It's 55 when I got here.
May 17th.
Yeah.
That's
nuts.
It's
that global warming really working there.
It's that damned global warming.
I gave it 3 more months before we're all cannibals.
Yep. Well, you know, Ted Nugent gives it about 10 years. You give it 3 months. Well, somewhere in that vicinity. I will say that. So, I don't know. It's been an interesting week. I tell you, I keep running into discussions with liberals at work. It's getting crazy.
I'd imagine.
We were discussing, there's a book out called Nickeled and Dimed.
Uh-huh.
It's about how this woman from the New York Times apparently pretended to be poverty, you know, impoverished for, I mean, didn't pretend, like she actually was.
Mm-hmm.
She worked minimum wage jobs and then wrote about it. And she's like, oh, well, you know, minimum wage should be higher, all that, you know, jazz.
Mm-hmm.
And it was an interesting thought. It was like, well, I wonder where the profits from the book are going.
Right.
Are they going to poor people, or are they just going into her pocket?
That's good.
Because
that's
after working a year minimum wage, she's probably just pocketing all of those profits.
I'd imagine.
So we had an interesting liberal conversation with the person.
They probably didn't have any idea what they were talking about.
No, they didn't, because she said that welfare is $400 a month. And then I had to tell her that welfare is state by state, and I can almost guarantee that nowhere is it $400 a month.
Yeah.
Considering welfare encompasses Medicaid, food stamps, and the cash reimbursements as well.
Yeah.
So, you know. Yeah, you could say that. She'd know what she's talking about.
Yeah. Well, liberal, Democrat, you know, it only makes sense.
That coincides with each other. Yeah, so, well, there's quite a bit going on this week, especially in the Democratic presidential race. Sometimes I forget that they're still doing that, considering Hillary Clinton has just, like, fallen off the face of the earth.
Yeah.
Because not only is she not going to win, mm-hmm. but no one's even talking about her anymore.
Right.
Before, the media was talking about, oh, just, like, screw her. Whatever.
Of course.
She's going nowhere. But I do want to talk about Barack Obama, and now he's getting his undies all in a bunch, because Bush made a speech in Israel about appeasement and whatnot, or he mentioned appeasement in the speech.
Mm-hmm.
And it got Barack Obama in a little bit of a tussle, despite... I'll just do this. Listen to the sound clip and tell me what would make Obama so irritated in this sound clip. Not on a policy standpoint, but from what Barack Obama calls a political attack standpoint.
Some seem to believe that we should negotiate with the terrorists and radicals as if some ingenious argument will persuade them they have been wrong all along. We've heard this foolish delusion before. As Nazi tanks crossed into Poland in 1939, an American senator declared, "Lord, if I could only have talked to Hitler, all this might have been avoided." We have an obligation to call this what it is, the false comfort of appeasement, which has been repeatedly discredited by history.
Logan, answer me this.
Mm-hmm.
What in there would have made Barack Obama contrive this as a political attack?
I think it was probably the part where he threatened to shoot Obama that was in there.
That was Mike Huckabee.
Yeah.
Did you hear that?
No, I didn't hear
You didn't
that.
Hear that?
No.
Oh, well, he didn't threaten. He joked about... He was speaking at the NRA convention,
uh-huh.
and there was this loud clash in the background, and Mike Huckabee goes, "That was Barack Obama dodging a bullet." And it was like, what?
Okay. That is a joke.
Yeah, there you go.
Jeez.
So, anyways, So yeah, there's nothing. He doesn't even mention Obama's name in the clip. Doesn't even mention the presidential race. Doesn't even mention the Democratic Party or single anybody out. In fact, his exact words were, "Some people believe whatever."
Right.
Some. That's not.
It's an accurate statement.
Yeah.
Could be anybody.
Well, the Obama campaign comes out right after that and says this. And this is Robert Gibbs on Talks with Iran. That's not true. His name's not Robert Gibbs. It's Robert something else. I don't know. I copied it wrong. I know it's not Robert Gibbs, though. Anyways, he said on CNN, "Obviously, this is an unprecedented political attack on foreign soil. Let's not confuse precondition with preparation. Obviously, these meetings would be full of preparation, but we're not going to sit down and engage Iran unless or until they give up their nuclear weapons program." So they can drive it as a political attack.
Ooh, so now we have Democrats saying that Iran has a nuclear weapons program. Hasn't that been something they've been going against for a long time now? We don't want confrontation with Iran.
Well, yeah. Well, it's funny because he mentions that, he says right here, "We're not going to sit down and engage Iran unless or until they give up their nuclear weapons program." That sounds a lot like a precondition to me. Let's take a walk down memory lane. The YouTube debate, Barack Obama's response to, "Are you going to speak with the leaders of Iran and a whole bunch of other countries without precondition in your first year?" And the question is included in this, so you get the context.
In 1982, Anwar Sadat traveled to Israel, a trip that resulted in a peace agreement that has lasted ever since. In the spirit of that type of bold leadership, would you be willing to meet separately, without precondition, during the first year of your administration in Washington or anywhere else, with the leaders of Iran, Syria, Venezuela, Cuba, and North Korea, in order to bridge the gap that divides our countries?
Should also point out that Stephen is in the crowd tonight. Senator Obama?
I would. And the reason is this, that the notion that somehow not talking to countries is punishment to them, which has been the guiding diplomatic principle of this administration, is ridiculous. Now, Ronald Reagan and Democratic presidents like JFK constantly spoke to Soviet Union at a time when Ronald Reagan called them an evil empire. And the reason is because they understood that we may not trust them, they may pose an extraordinary danger to this country, but we have the obligation to find areas where we can potentially move forward. And I think that it is a disgrace that we have not spoken to them. We've been talking about Iraq. One of the first things that I would do in terms of moving a diplomatic effort in the region forward is to send a signal that we need to talk to Iran and Syria, because they're going to have responsibilities if Iraq collapses. They have been acting irresponsibly up until this point. But if we tell them that we are not going to be a permanent occupying force, we are in a position to say that they are going to have to carry some weight in terms of stabilizing the region.
All right. So what's it going to be, Barack Obama? Is it going to be you speak to them without precondition, or you request they cease their nuclear program? Because one side of your camp is saying one thing, and then you're saying the other thing.
Right.
Oh, by the way, on his website, he says, "I'm going to speak with them without precondition."
Mm-hmm.
But I think Barack Obama in this clip confuses speaking without precondition.
Mm-hmm.
You can speak to countries. Kind of burping all over the place. You can speak to countries and request they, you know, do something in exchange for whatever, or talk with them, but, you know, it's a slippery slope, move very slowly.
Mm-hmm.
But what Barack Obama promised to in this clip was to speak with them without precondition, which means you cannot say, "We're not going to speak with you until you get rid of your nuclear program," which is what your communications director is saying.
Mm-hmm.
And also anywhere in the world, and in his first term in office, first year in office. That's quite the commitment to say in a YouTube debate.
Yeah. Sticking slightly with, but kind of venturing off, we've always talked throughout the last couple of episodes about different stories within the Obama campaign. All right, this is his campaign, all right? And in his campaign, he cannot keep things straight. What is it going to be like if he is our president? I mean, what type of organization system are we going to have where one person says A, second person says B, third person says C? If he can't do it in a campaign, how is he going to manage the presidency of the most powerful country in the world?
He's not. I mean, this guy's only been in the Senate for 3.5 years.
Now, granted, he's been in 57 states so far.
That's true.
As we discovered in our last episode.
If there's any reason to elect him, he's discovered 10 states that no one has yet to discover.
Yeah.
I think it's pretty damn impressive.
And when we say 10, he doesn't assume that there's, he doesn't think there's 47 states. If you didn't listen to our last episode, Barack Obama said he's been to 57 and he has three more to go.
He said he had been to 57, had one to go, hadn't been to Alaska and Hawaii.
Yeah, there you go.
Missed out on those two.
Yeah.
Darn it. So anyways, then Obama came out and said that Bush launched a false attack on him.
Of course.
Keep in mind that he didn't even mention his name in the attack. That's quite a feat if you can attack somebody without even mentioning their name.
Not even their party? Not making any reference to them?
Really impressive.
Yeah.
He came out and quote, "It is sad that President Bush would use a speech to the Knesset on the 60th anniversary of Israel's independence to launch a false political attack." Obama said in a statement his aides distributed, "George Bush knows that I have never supported engagement with terrorists." He never said you did.
Mm-hmm.
"And the president's extraordinary politicalization of foreign policy and the politics of fear do nothing to secure the American people or our stalwart ally Israel."
Hmm. Now, real quick, on the topic of Israel, what do you think about Israel? Just as a whole.
Should we be
as strongly interconnected with them as we are?
I think we have to be. I mean, because if we look at who's fighting against them,
mm-hmm.
Hamas, Hezbollah, mm-hmm. the people we claim are terrorists,
right.
We can't just say, those people are attacking you, mm-hmm. go off on your own and hope
right.
for the best.
Right.
I mean...
Personally, and this is going to be one of the issues that I don't lean quite as conservative on, still conservative, I think that we need to be allies with Israel, but I think that somebody needs to step in and say to Israel, you got to stop the crap that you're doing with your constantly expanding lands and kicking Palestinians out of camp. I mean, in a sense, they're asking for it. You know, it was 1954, 55, a UN mandate went to Palestine and said, "Hey, we got a great idea for you. We're going to take half your land and give it to Israel, or give it to what will then be Israel. What do you think?" And they said, "Hell no." And they said, "All right, well, then we're going to take all of it." So, you know, I think to a degree, Israel needs to kind of back off. I think that so many problems in that area would be solved if Israel gave up at least, of what they've taken. Because mm-hmm. they have taken it. There's no question in my mind. I'm not justifying to any degree, make no mistake, these terrorists, Hamas, you know, all of them, need to be dealt with. And I will absolutely support Israel in that fashion. But I think Israel needs to back off. Because they're egging this on, I think, just about as much as they can.
It's their 60th anniversary, so hey, woohoo. The controversy over these comments sparked a lot of Democrats were pissed off about this, despite the fact that the Democrats weren't even mentioned in the comment.
Mm-hmm.
Nancy Pelosi says Bush's remarks were, quote, "beneath the dignity of the office of the president and unworthy of our representation."
Time out. Now, the dignity of the office. Now, she was the one who wanted the most ethical Congress, right?
Exactly.
And I think you actually did a report. How much money had she spent on flowers of taxpayer money?
Ooh, I don't remember.
Wasn't it like $16,000 in the first 2 months?
I'll check out the commercial break because we have the notes over there. My thing is, do you think that it's beneath the dignity of the office of the Speaker of the House, to claim that the surge has failed in July when the report's not even due till September? Do you think it's under the dignity of the office of the Speaker of the House to say that the war is lost when we're not even done fighting during a wartime, and say the war is lost, for you to say that as a U.S. politician? Do you think that's under the dignity of the office?
You know, I'm thinking so. You know, we've both heard the expression, you know, assumptions make an ass out of you and me.
Yeah.
I mean, how much of an ass does she have to be?
She's a big ass. Yes.
Clearly.
And referring to Senator John McCain, Pelosi said, quote, "I would hope that any serious person that aspires to lead the country would disassociate themselves from those comments."
Give me a break. It's talking on foreign policy.
That's
the duty of the president.
This is a foreign policy discussion that he's basically engaging in or starting with here. Joe Biden, who, remember, dropped out of the presidential race, and for some reason he still believes people want to hear him talk. Apparently he hasn't realized no one cares anymore.
Yeah. Yeah.
He says, quote, "This is bullshit. This is malarkey." Wouldn't that be under the dignity of the office to use language like that?
That's perfect.
"This is malarkey. This is outrageous for the president of the United States to go to a foreign country to sit in the Knesset and make this kind of ridiculous statement."
Yeah.
Joe Biden.
Yeah. Hey.
So anyways, McCain then gets into this little tussle here. This is like a WWF wrestling match. It was like Bush was just standing in the ring, mm-hmm. and then Obama came in, and they started fighting and punching,
right.
and then Bush is like, screw this, and McCain comes in. And or McCain just comes in as a third person with a chair, a folding chair, and starts beating the crap out of
Obama.
Nothing
wrong with that.
That's what they do in the WWF. So,
amen.
Hey,
amen.
He says that Obama is being reckless. Here is the sound clip.
Earlier today, Senator Obama made a few remarks I'd like to respond to. I welcome a debate about protecting America. No issue is more important. Senator Obama claimed all I had to offer was the, quote, naive and irresponsible belief that tough talk would cause Iran to give up its nuclear program. He should have known better. I have some news for Senator Obama. Talking, not even with soaring rhetoric, unconditional, in unconditional meetings with a man who calls Israel a stinking corpse and arms terrorists who kill Americans will not convince Iran to give up its nuclear program. It is reckless. It is reckless to suggest that unconditional meetings will advance our interests. You know, it would be a wonderful thing if we lived in a world where we don't have enemies, but that's not the world we live in. And until Senator Obama understands that reality, the American people have every reason to doubt whether he has the strength, judgment, and determination to keep us safe.
Obama then comes back. We'll talk about that, Obama's response to that, and his we're going to start. I think we're going to start a segment on the show
mm-hmm.
called Obama's Ignorant Statement of the Week, because we've got one here.
I love it.
We've got one here, and it's become commonplace. So we'll go over that and more after the break.
Of a new dimension of political talk, the Karen Podcast.
The 2008 presidential race is heating up. Don't let the media speak for you. Make your own statement with political apparel from conservativebuys.com. They have the largest selection of t-shirts, bumper stickers, and political gifts on the net, including anti-Hillary, illegal immigration, and pro-Second Amendment gear. conservativebuys.com also offers election gear featuring Rudy Giuliani, Mitt Romney, and more. And up to 20% of all proceeds go to support charities and conservative causes. Save $5 off a purchase of $20 or more. conservativebuys.com.
Hello?
Mr. Johnson, this is Greg's cell phone calling.
My son, Greg?
Yeah, I'm with him all the time. I know what's up.
Yeah? What's up?
Well, the other night, Greg was at this cat's crib, and he was smoking a blunt.
What? I'll put the fear into that kid?
No, I meant the other dude. Greg passed.
Still, if he was there, let me talk to Greg.
Hold up. G's taking a test right now. I'm turned off.
And then how can...
Try us back after school. That's prime time.
Talking. The anti-drug. Learn more at theantidrug.com. Sponsored by the ONDCP and the Partnership for a Drug-Free America.
Hey everybody, this is Jacob from The Current. I just want to let you all know of a new series we're doing called Teens in Politics. We're going to have a panel of four teenagers discussing teens in politics, who they support, and issues that are important to the youth of the country. All the candidates this year have acknowledged the fact that the teen vote is important to them this year. So join us on Saturday, April 26th for Teens in Politics and learn what teenagers believe and who they support in the upcoming election.
Sunday dinner. It was more than sitting down to one of Grandma's great recipes. Sunday dinner was an all-day event. A day of football and pickup games in the backyard. A day where the more the merrier was the rule. A day filled with family and friends and more than a few laughs. Sunday dinner topped off the most special day of the week. And no one remembers Sundays better than we do here in Michigan's Saginaw Valley. From cultural arts to down-home entertainment, championship golf courses to the Midwest's best shopping, Michigan's Saginaw Valley serves up something special for everyone.
Well, Welcome back, everybody, to the current episode 96. Logan was playing air guitar during the break.
I was.
Do you ever play Guitar Hero?
I have never.
You've never played Guitar Hero? I've only played it like once. I
probably suck at it.
Yeah, I suck at it. It's a really tough game.
I suck at Dance Dance Revolution, too. I only played that
That requires physical exertion, though.
That's a good point.
And I've never played Rock Band. I've heard a lot of good things about Rock Band. You have to sing in Rock Band, so I would assume that I suck at that.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd blow.
Exactly, yeah. That number, by the way, Pelosi spent $16,000 on flowers, but as a total in her first 9 months of 07, $3 million.
There you go.
That's
$16,000 on flowers. Hey, everybody, that is your taxpayer money buying her flowers.
They weren't just any old flowers. They were charged for, what were they? Oh, they were for foreign dignitaries, such as Israeli's Prime Minister, French President Sarkozy, and Jordan's King Abdullah.
I don't care.
Yeah, neither do I.
They don't need flowers.
Yeah. It's not like they're like, oh, I love the wonderful flowers you've given to me.
Yeah.
That's a beautiful gift. I love your country.
I highly doubt that Nicolas Sarkozy is going to come to America, get off the plane, and when he doesn't get flowers, just turn around and go home.
Screw the Americans! He's a ladies' man, though. So.
And he likes Bush.
He does.
The first French conservative elected in a very long time.
See, and we'll talk about this later, because we're going to talk about next how the GOP is kind of slipping here. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of on the rise. London has its first conservative mayor.
Yeah.
So
now Gordon Brown, is he a?
I don't know what he is.
I don't know.
I think
I'm
he's in the middle
out.
Of the road. Yeah, you do some research.
Gordon Brown is an interesting looking fellow.
Meanwhile, it's time for the Obama ignorant statement of the week. And I think if we're going to do the Obama ignorant statement of the week, we should do. We should play this clip because I think this clip would go well with this ignorant statement of the week. So it's time for the Barack Obama ignorant statement of the week. Okay, so the Are You Smarter Than Barack Obama? Barack Obama ignorant statement of the week is he says that he wouldn't negotiate with terrorists, but hey what? Guess what? He's going to negotiate with Iran.
And I'm a strong believer in a bipartisan foreign policy. But that cause is not served with dishonest, divisive attacks of the sort that we've seen out of George Bush and John McCain over the last couple of days. John McCain has repeated this notion that I'm prepared to negotiate with terrorists. I have never said that. I have been adamant about not negotiating with Hamas, a terrorist organization that has vowed to destroy Israel and won't recognize them.
Okay, that's the first part of this clip, because I want to point out that his idea of Hamas and his reason for not negotiating with Hamas is because they they want to wipe Israel off the map.
Right.
They don't recognize Israel. Now, remind me, Iran believes the same thing. They had a conference discussing how the Holocaust didn't happen.
Yeah.
Ahmadinejad comes out all the time and says Israel should be wiped off the map. So if that's what you're determining deeming a terrorist organization is by those boundaries, then Iran is.
Mm-hmm.
Continuing with that clip, he goes on to say,
in fact, the irony is yesterday, just as John McCain was making these attacks, a story broke that he was actually guilty of the exact same thing that he is accusing me of, and in fact was saying that maybe we need to deal with Hamas. And that's the kind of hypocrisy that we've been seeing in our foreign policy, the kind of fear peddling, fear mongering that has prevented us from actually making us safer. You know, they're trying to fool you and trying to scare you, and they're not telling the
It's
manipulation.
It's manipulation. So not only does he say that, because there are two things in the statement, this is a double dose of Obama ignorance here. He says that he doesn't want to negotiate with Hamas, but he'll negotiate with Iran despite the fact that, oh, by the way, Iran supplies weapons
arms
to Hamas and Hezbollah and wants Israel blown off the world, et cetera, et cetera. And apparently they're not a terrorist organization. He cites in that sound clip, and I don't believe Logan heard it because we were talking about Gordon Brown, but he cites in that sound clip a story about how McCain agrees with his statement about Hamas or about Iran. It was about Hamas when they got into power.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And he says that he's a hypocrite because of this story that came out. The story was by Jamie Rubin. And Jamie Rubin quoted in the story this clip of John McCain, an interview he did in 2005 with John McCain.
They're the government, and sooner or later we're going to have to deal with them in one way or another. And I understand why this administration and previous administrations had such antipathy towards Hamas is because of their dedication to violence and the things they not only espouse but practice. So But it's a new reality in the Middle East. And I think the lesson is people want security and a decent life and a decent future. Then they want democracy. Fatah was not giving them that.
Okay. So that was the story that Jamie Rubin quoted in, or the quote that Jamie Rubin quoted in the story, mm-hmm. basically saying that, hey, McCain believes that we should have engaged with Hamas after they were got into power. Little problemo.
Mm-hmm.
McCain said this right after he said that in the exact same interview. This is called what you call clarifying your mm-hmm. statements.
So should we, the United States, be dealing with that new reality through normal diplomatic contacts to get the job done for the United States?
I think the United States should take a step back, see what they do when they form their government, see what their policies are, and see the ways that we can engage with them. And if there aren't any, there may be a hiatus. But I think part of the relationship is going to be dictated by how Hamas acts, not how the United States acts.
So not only did Barack Obama basically flip-flop on the idea of Iran, but he also cited a story that was false to mm-hmm. prove his point.
Right.
That's some Obama. That is a big old honking vat of Obama ignorance.
First of all, saying something stupid is bad enough to begin with.
Yeah.
But then I don't want to say it's an absolute lie, but using...
On whose part? Barack Obama or Jamie Rubin?
Barack Obama.
Okay.
Yeah. But using only half of an or a piece of an interview. I mean, anybody could say anything in an interview, and if you just take one little bit of it, you can make it sound like something completely and totally different. To do that, to justify what you're saying is unfortunate.
And the guy who wrote the article, Jamie Rubin, who also interviewed McCain, in the article only used that first mm-hmm. sound clip to describe it, and then Barack Obama read that, and instead of researching and realizing that, oh, this was misrepresented, mm-hmm. and then he uses it to say that McCain's a hypocrite.
Yeah. I'd like to add this also. If this is how he negotiates with American politicians, if this is how, you know, it's a presidential campaign, you know, there's going to be times where it gets nasty, but this is downright unprofessional. If he can't act professional running for president against a potential president, how is he going to go off and negotiate with Iran? I mean, Iran's going to be a hell of a lot more stubborn than McCain is.
Yeah.
I mean, like you just said, they refuse to recognize Israel as a state.
Mm-hmm.
How is Barack Obama going to respond and negotiate with people like that when he can't professionally deal with John McCain?
It's a wonder. It is a wonder. And moving on, I want to talk a little bit about this because I believe that a big reason that – and there was a story that actually came out that said Republicans might lose 70 seats mm-hmm. in the House because people are just – I mean I think it's because Republicans are selling the party out more or less.
Mm-hmm.
And this kind of proves it to me. And we're going to talk about two stories that kind of prove it to me. One, a day after losing another special election in a GOP stronghold, House Republicans – so they lost the seat in Louisiana, which was mm-hmm. apparently this big important seat. I don't know. I'm not a geopolitical person, but apparently it was a big deal. House Republicans pointed fingers at each other and at President Bush, saying that their, quote, brand has become an albatross and warning that their party faces deep and serious problems heading into the November elections. Well, no doubt. No kidding.
Duh.
That's obviously. So what do they offer up to fix it? Nothing.
Uh-huh.
They just pointed fingers at each other.
They're starting to act like Democrats.
They are, exactly. They are selling us out, basically. They're getting to the point where they literally just point – what was it? House Minority Leader John Boehner called Tuesday night's special election loss in Mississippi – or maybe it was Mississippi, whatever, doesn't matter – a wake-up call for Republicans. But that's what he said about the Republican special election loss in Louisiana last week, too. Boehner said Republicans have to do a better job if they're going to avoid an electoral bloodbath in November, but he also said he has no preconceived ideas about what that meant. So they're just pointing fingers at each other. They're playing hot potato with the blame, mm-hmm. and they're not doing anything to fix it.
This reminds me, the day after the senatorial elections in 2006,
mm-hmm.
it would have been,
mm-hmm.
I can remember Sean Hannity saying, all right, you know, we lost, okay? We lost. What we need to do now is stop complaining, face the fact that we lost, and work together to find a way to mm-hmm. make sure that we win.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, if you know, a lot of Sean Hannity, crazy, you know, fine. But, you know, he made a good point, all right? If you want results, You have to work together. All right, and you can't be pointing fingers. Let the Democrats do that. They're pretty good at that already.
They're fantastic at pointing fingers.
They're doing it here, but I don't think we'll ever match their capabilities at blaming or finding a scapegoat. But we need to work together if we want a Republican conservative government.
Mm-hmm.
If we want small Washington, we need to stop pointing fingers.
Yes, and that is what the problem has been. It's that the people who we have elected into office, and the thing is, I mean, we have Congress whose ratings are abysmal. No one likes anybody in Congress at like 15%, and that includes Republicans. It's not just – I'm not just going to put that on Democrats because Democrats are in control of Congress because Republicans are in Congress as well.
Yeah.
The reason it's just gotten so out of hand is that – well, we have earmarks for one. Those aren't helping anybody, you know. Especially, and even most of the liberal base doesn't even like earmarks. Conservatives especially don't like earmarks. Mm-hmm. But yet, the biggest earmark spenders. When we did this story about Hillary Clinton and the billions she had asked for in earmarks, she had overtaken a Republican who had the record for most earmarks. Mm-hmm. That's not what a Republican does or believes. A true conservative Republican doesn't take huge chunks of money in earmarks.
Mm-hmm.
So that is really the big reason. We can go key issues like immigration, which is a huge Republican issue. They failed to do anything on in Congress. They couldn't get together and get anything done. Part of it is a reason, in my mind, that the conservatives the Republicans have lost touch with the base, just are going in it for they're controlled by special interest, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Another part of it for me is that no one in Congress works with each other anymore.
No one.
No. In fact, there's an interesting, and I'll link to it in the show notes. An interesting thing online showing, and it uses all these different roll call votes from like the 1900s on up, and the gap between Republicans and Democrats has widened considerably over the last, I don't know how long it is, 50-some-odd years or whatever, to the point where barely any roll call votes overlap anymore. It is so divided, and that is a big problem. Now, the question is, we got to find someone who can, and there's not just like one sole amazing person who can unite everybody, Barack Obama claims he is.
Right.
It's going to have to be electing the right people, and every district has to kind of join together and elect the right people into office, hold everyone accountable.
Mm-hmm.
But no one knows what's going on, so you can't hold anybody accountable when you don't know what the hell's going on.
Right. And it brings me back to something I've always said. You know, I think effective politics starts to take place when we have term limits on senators. You look at Ted Kennedy.
Yeah.
I mean, he's been in there for what? Since 19... What? It's got to be the
I believe since dinosaurs roamed the earth.
There you go. And whatever it is. My point is that he's been in there so long, and I doubt he's ever changed his mind on a damn thing.
Doubtful.
I mean, he is just... I mean, there's just so many people like him, too.
Yeah.
You know, it
in Massachusetts.
That's the
thing.
When politics hits a point where most politicians, or I shouldn't say most, some even, when politicians, it just seems like they're more concerned about getting themselves reelected.
They are.
Ooh, I won.
Exactly.
What do I need to do to get reelected 4 years down the road? It's
exactly.
Like, calm down.
Mm-hmm.
And do your damn job.
That's what earmarks are all about. You funnel money back to your district, and they'll reelect you if you give them enough money. You're essentially buying your vote.
Yeah.
If you don't have earmarks, oh, wow, novel idea. Actually, have to be a good senator now to get reelected.
If you give them 2 or even 3 4-year terms, they get in there. They know they have 4, 8, or 12 years, whatever it is. If I want to be known and respected, I better get to work and start doing something good.
Yeah.
And it leads to effective politics. And I think that's where everything starts.
And you even have a situation with people who just go into to the U.S. Congress simply to make the leap for the President of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll use Barack Obama as my example here because I don't think there's any question in my mind that he goes into the U.S. Congress not to, you know, do good for the people of Illinois or the Chicago district he was representing, but to jump into the presidency. There's no other reason why he would be in the Congress for a year and a half and then decide to run for president.
Right.
You know, going in, when you jump into Congress, you're going to run for president. If a year and a half out, you then go ahead and run. John McCain at least waited about 15 years before he did anything.
Mm-hmm.
And here's even more proof. We have a numbers from April that have come in. And while the U.S. government did post a surplus of $159.3 billion, helped by the mid-month deadline for individuals meeting 2007 tax obligations, but it was down from years prior. In the first 7 months of the fiscal year 2008, which ends in September, the government's budget deficit swelled by 88.4% to $152 billion from U.S. $80 billion in the first 7 months of fiscal year 2007. The latest figures point to growing strain on the budget, which is poised to face a deeper deficit as payments under an economic stimulus program agreed by Congress and the Bush administration get into full swing. So basically, mm-hmm. our deficit is getting larger and larger and larger and larger and larger, mm-hmm. and that's not good.
Right.
to put it simply, that's not good.
Right.
And you look at this and you say, how can this happen? How does something like this happen when we have a Republican in office? Mm-hmm. How does it happen? It's because Bush has done, he has done half of what you want to do as a Republican. He's cut taxes, but the spending hasn't been cut.
Right.
It also doesn't help that Congress has spent, you know, just an exorbitant amount of money.
Yeah.
And he doesn't have the line item veto. Mm-hmm. He can't cross items out and say, right. well, I don't want to spend it here. I don't want to spend it there.
Right.
Because it gives too much power to the executive branch. So it's like no one's doing good.
Yeah.
What's up?
Yeah. From listening to the show, I'm sure that over, you know, what we've been doing it just about 2 years now, over 2 years.
Ested 2006.
Amen. I'm sure you've gathered that Jacob and I are both supporters of President Bush. In my opinion, at least, he's had his fair share of fallacies, just like any other president. I absolutely support going to war, but, you know, it's very difficult to do what Republicans generally tend to like their president to do when you're in a war. It's very difficult to cut costs when you're in a war. He's definitely cut taxes.
Mm-hmm.
There's no question of that. He's done a fine job at it. I always feel so sorry for him. It seems like a lot of the stuff that he gets blamed for, in some degree at least, is out of his control.
Most of it
the
is,
bad
yeah,
economy. That's not one man's problem. Okay?
You know, well, no, he made the economy terrible all by himself.
Yeah, I mean, you can't blame the economy. And just no. like people always say, well, Bill Clinton made the economy great.
No.
Yeah, because Bill Clinton just went out and bought $29 trillion worth of stuff one day. No.
It helps that he had the dot-com bubble in
right.
the 1990s.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And like you said, it's not one single person who screws up the economy or makes the economy better. Mm-hmm. It's all 300 million of us.
Mm-hmm.
Because if there's no consumer... Mm-hmm. then there's no economy.
Right.
So, yeah, exactly. And it's – but it's been kind of a thing where, I mean, you have such – and you can cut spending even in wartime.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't – it also doesn't help that Social Security is out of control.
Yeah.
And when Bush tried
privatize
to –
privatize
it. Yeah.
Let people manage their own money.
Exactly.
Why does the government need to be the biggest bank on earth?
And when Bush tried to suggest that,
mm-hmm.
he was – you know, he was basically shot down.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, he was like, the Democrats were like, oh my God, no, we're never going to do that. Well, you privatize
it. Well, you can privatize it or it'll be gone in 30 years.
There's your choice.
There's your options, okay? You can let, you know, there's the thing is at the beginning, I will agree, Social Security was a great idea. But when it was first, established, people didn't live to be 92 years old as
exactly.
a norm.
Exactly.
All right, there's been, I mean, they just sap so much money out of it. And
yeah.
unless you want to pay 40% of your paycheck to Social Security for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
And get on with it.
And the other
fact.
Thing is, I mean, let's think about it this way. The reason no one is making money, you know, you get to the retirement age,
mm-hmm.
automatically retire, mooch off Social Security
yep.
the rest of your life.
Yeah.
And it's because it's there for you to do that to
mm-hmm.
it. It's there for you to get
yeah.
money. You rely 100% on it because that's what we've gotten, letting it get to the point to. We don't know. It's the same thing with welfare. Like I was saying
mm-hmm.
before, we're talking to a liberal friend at work. You get to the point where
yeah.
welfare had no limit on it before welfare reform.
Mm-hmm.
No limit. You could mooch off welfare for as long as your poor ass wanted to. So
yeah.
you need to make it so it's uncomfortable to be in welfare.
Right.
Because the girl I was talking to about welfare was, it's $400. Well, okay, one, it's not.
Right.
Two, it should be. In fact, it shouldn't even, it should be like
$100. Yeah.
Because the less it is, the more incentive it gives you to actually get off your lazy butt and get a job.
Right.
That's what it is. The same
yeah.
with Social Security.
Yeah.
Is because when you get to retirement age, instead of going a little further, making some more money, saving up in the years before...
Yeah.
You just knowing that Social Security is going to be there for you to live off of the rest of your life,
mm-hmm.
you're automatic. Why would I save my money then for
right.
retirement? Why
right.
would I bother with it for?
Right. If the government's going to do it for me. You know, I was speaking with a teacher that Jacob and I have both had. You know who I'm speaking of, I'm sure.
Eventually I'll find out.
Crazy liberal he is. He's a nice guy, but he's very left-wing.
The minute you said that.
I was talking with him about Social Security, and I said, I think we need to privatize it. People need to manage their own money. And he goes, well, no, you can't do that because, you know, people are just going to spend their money. That's not my problem, okay? Yeah. If you're 70 and have no money, get a job at Walmart. Not my problem.
Exactly.
I shouldn't have to pay so that you can live comfortably on a leather sofa in a Cadillac in southern Florida.
You have to know the consequences. If you have all this money and say, well, people are just going to spend it. Who cares? It's their money. They can do whatever the hell they want with it. Yeah. But they've got to know that if they do that, they're going to be screwed down the road. And if they learn the hard way, I don't care.
Maybe you're not 90 years old yet. Apply it to a situation you would have been in. You know, if you're a kid, you know, you're 16, 17. If throughout that time your parents are buying you Hummers and Escalades and not making you pay for a dime, all right, and then you get thrown out in the real world, well, you're not going to know what the hell to do.
Exactly.
Right? The government can't hold your hand and walk you through life.
Yeah.
There needs to be a time where you step up and take responsibility for yourself.
We can't be a nanny state.
Yeah.
We can't.
Let Denmark do that.
Exactly, yes.
Let Denmark do that, and you can and you can pay 60 to 65% of your paycheck to you know Uncle what do they have Uncle Johan or something I'm sure
I'm sure some massive lumberjack in overalls and a plaid shirt.
It's Social Security. The word is in the name. Socialist.
Yeah.
Okay.
Social.
Everything this country stands against. We are a democracy, not a socialism.
Yeah. The reason Social Security and Medicaid and welfare come around is because it makes the people who do it or create it feel good. They don't care that they're sucking the money away from taxpayers and then it's going to be, you know, dried up in X amount of years. But it just makes them feel good. Man, I feel like I helped somebody today. No, you didn't help anybody.
You didn't object shit.
No, you didn't. You hurt 300 million people. It comes down to just feeling good about yourself. Because that's what it is. It's almost human nature to do something that makes you feel good and not think about it logically.
Right.
Is universal healthcare a perfect example? You hear all these sob stories. Mm-hmm. Oh, Bob can't afford health care. Oh, we should give him nationalized health care.
Bob shouldn't have quit his job. Okay?
Yeah. Bob should see if he's eligible for Medicaid or Medicare.
Yeah.
But it's like universal health care, instead of thinking about it logically and blocking out all these sob stories that Clinton and Obama pull out of their ass, we have to think about it logically instead of just being like, oh my God, I feel so bad.
Right.
I just would feel so good if I could help them. Okay, I understand wanting to help people. I'm not against helping people.
Absolutely not. That's great.
I'm for helping people in a logical way.
Right.
The Democrats are for helping people in an illogical, ignorant way.
I mean, how far is this? How far are we going to go? Are we going to have, you know, like the Democrat that comes to your house to wipe your ass when you get off the toilet? I mean,
that'd be nice.
There has to be a limit.
See, exactly. See, that would be what you just suggested there. If they wipe my ass for me, would be wonderful. It would be awesome. It would be nice.
Yes.
But it's not needed.
I don't know if that would be very nice. It would be uncomfortable.
Okay, so it would be a little weird.
Maybe pour my pop for me. Maybe just a Democrat assigned to pour my pop.
Pour my pop. Serve me. Be my butler. Yes, universal butler.
Yes.
Everyone gets a butler. Yes. That would be awesome. Chauffeur butler provided by the government would love it. That would be awesome.
And now you pay 40% in taxes to afford it.
But it's not logical and it serves no purpose.
Right.
It's not needed.
Right.
Need versus want. You learn that when you're 4 years old.
Yeah.
Democrats apparently just don't learn that. That's what it is. We can classify the Democrats as the people who were never taught need versus want.
Right.
And the conservatives are the one whose parents sat them down and said, there are needs and there are wants.
The Republicans are the one that mastered the lesson on opportunity cost in economics.
Yes.
What you have to give up to gain something and when it doesn't become worth it.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, the example that was taught to me, you know, you can study for 1 hour and get an A-, or you can study for 10 hours and get an A. Take the A-.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, there comes a point where logically it's not worth it.
Mm-hmm.
And Social Security is not worth everything that's paying into it and all the people that are sapping out of it. It needs to be privatized.
This is The Current. Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. 80 SPF sunblock wearer.
Mr. 80 SPF sunblock wearer.
There are 24 hours in a day. You're wearing 80-hour protection. If the sun fails to go down, you'll be ready.
Don't forget the moonlight.
Your coconut-scented force field blocks out all the sun's rays and any stray rays from another sun in another galaxy.
Your star.
30 SPF. please, you might as well be wearing cooking oil.
Something smells delicious.
So crack open an ice-cold Bud Light, Mr. 80 SPF sunblock wearer. In fact, feel free to crack one open at high noon in the middle of the Sahara Desert.
Mr. 80 SPF sunblock wearer.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, Cartersville, Georgia.
The U.S. Chamber of Commerce states when signage is part of overall marketing, the increase in revenue is profound. Signage is the least expensive yet most cost-effective form of advertising, and you invest just once. The LED Sign Company of Texas is number one in sales among more than 500 sign companies nationwide, and our last 10 testimonials averaged 45.6% in sales increases. To see real case studies and testimonials, visit us at valueofsigns.com.
Hi, this is Jamie from America's Debate Radio. Be sure to tune in every Wednesday night at 9 o'clock Eastern as Mike and I take your phone calls on today's top stories and hottest issues. That's America's Debate Radio. Find out more at radio.americasdebate.net.
Do you worry about your toddler falling and needing stitches? Do you want to protect your child from an unneeded hospital visit? Have you protected your child by covering your stone brick or potentially dangerous fireplace hearth? Baby Safety Foam is a safety foam product that is custom fitted to your specific fireplace, assuring your child's safety at all times. Place an order today on our website and you're guaranteed to have your own custom fireplace Baby Safety Foam cover at your door in days. Order online now at babysafetyfoam.com. That's babysafetyfoam.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to The Current. Fun fact, we're going to do... I love this book, by the way. Go out and get it. Secret Lives of the U.S. President. It's a fun read. And we're going to do a fun fact from each president for every episode from now until, I don't know, 53 episodes from now, or 43 episodes from now. George Washington's salary, you know, the president nowadays gets paid, what, like $400,000? Or no, like $100,000 or something
like that. Yeah, it's not very much, but all of his expenses
are paid for. Well, you get the limos and the Air Force One and all that stuff. Well, back in the day when our first president was around, his salary was the equivalent of $1 million today, which is quite a large sum of money.
No kidding.
And he indulged in such luxuries as leopard skin robes for all of his horses, and he spent 7% of it on alcohol.
Wow.
What a great American.
Liberal.
He's a Federalist.
Was he?
Well, he was a no party to begin with because we didn't know what the hell was going on.
Right.
And he was a Federalist in his second term. So, but back in then, you really know. Mm-hmm. Kind of, but a Federalist would line up with probably a Republican in terms of the state level today. Ran against John Adams and John Jay and then John Adams and George Clinton.
This country
Clinton.
Started off right. The first president ever was a conservative.
Fun fact, if he would have lost his second term battle, there would have been two Clinton presidents already because he ran against George Clinton for his second term.
Thank God.
Not, I don't think there's any relation.
I'm not thinking.
I doubt it. But, well, I don't know, maybe.
Might have been scandal in that office, too.
Oh, I'm sure he was sleeping around. Because every president
slept
around.
You know what we
should do? I don't know what.
We should, as a poll, ask what the next Clinton scandal would have been. Has she been elected? There been a murder in there? Anything?
Let's see. What? Well, she is very hot-headed.
Yeah.
So she could have ripped someone's ear off. She could have pulled a Mike Tyson and bit someone's ear off.
Hit someone with the cell phone.
Hit someone with the cell phone. Yeah.
What is her name? Carlita Fitzpatrick.
Kwame's wife. Yeah.
Oh, he's in the news again. Well, that's another story.
Oh, we're not gonna talk about that. Jesus Christ. Anyways, well, what could Clinton have done?
Well, good God, you never know.
Beaten an old woman.
There you go. With a cane.
And a stick.
Yeah, and burned her. You know,
a baseball bat in one hand, a cane in the other. Just beaten simultaneously.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
All right, hey, moving on to, well, not moving on. This actually is under the same banner as the thing we did before. I just couldn't get to it. This next story kind of shows how our Congress is doing nothing. Just off the House floor today, the Crypt, which is a blog on the Politico, overheard House Judiciary Committee Chairman John Conyers tell two other people, quote, "We're closing in on Rove," Karl Rove, that is, "someone's got to kick his ass," end quote. Mind you, Karl Rove isn't working in the White House anymore. Asked a few minutes later for a more official explanation, Conyers told us that Rove has a week to appear before his committee. If he doesn't, said Conyers, quote, "we'll do that. We'll do what any self-respecting committee would do. We'd hold him in contempt, either that or go and have him arrested." So our Congress, instead of tackling the unsurmountable amount of issues that are facing our country right now. Immigration, which has been pushed off the wayside. Mm-hmm. We've got gas prices. We've got the economy. We've got oil. We've got foreign policy. Those are just five off the top of my head. Mm-hmm. Instead, they're trying to go after a guy who is no longer working for the White House
right.
for some stupid reason about the imprisonment of former Alabama Governor Don Siegelman, among other things. Is that really what they should be doing right now?
It just goes back to the, effective politics starts at term limits. Because I think that, if I'm a senator and I, if I'm going to be there 4 years, this is not important, all right? If I want to make my name known, if I want to go down in the history books, then I'm going to deal on the stuff that you just said, okay? Mm-hmm. But if I know that I'm going to get all these earmarks and be able to be reelected and whatever, then what do I care?
Mm-hmm.
I'm here the rest of my life.
Yep.
It's I think a lot of politicians feel that they are in a tenured position just because they are so well known.
Yep. Hey, we had the last week, we wanted you guys to vote on songs that described Hillary Clinton's campaign. And we got some good feedback.
Mm-hmm.
And we actually had some responses on the Hannity.com forums on Sean Hannity, but I didn't go and check them out. I couldn't find the topic again because it goes far down so quick. But anyways, mm-hmm. the poll on the website, the winner, drum roll please, woo, is Should I Stay or Should I Go by The Clash, 62.5%, Desperado coming in second with 25%, and Tub Thumpin' came in third with 12.5%.
Bitches Back didn't do too hot then.
Bitches Back didn't. I don't think people understood it
yeah.
unless you described to them that it's
right.
for the people of New York.
Mm-hmm.
So if you voted in the poll, you would have understood that unless you listened to the show.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Whatever. Anyway, so we're going to play the winning song, or at least a portion of it, right now. This one, dedicated to Hillary Clinton and her ever-fading campaign mm-hmm. and her big indecision that she cannot seem to figure out what to do.
Yeah.
Should I Stay or Should I Go by The Clash. I feel like a radio disc jockey
yes.
right now.
Yeah.
On 94.4. Whatever.
Darling, you got to let me know. Should I stay or should I go? If you say that you are mine, I'll be here till the end of time. So you got to let me know. Should I stay or should I go? It's always tease, tease, tease. You're happy when I'm on my knees. One day is fine, the next is black. So if you want me off your back, well come on and let me know. Should I stay or should I go? Should I stay or should I go now? Should I stay or should I go now? If I go there will be trouble.
January 2009, I'm afraid I'm going to lift up the rug and I'm going to see so much stuff under there. And, what is it about us always having to clean up after people? I ask you to join me on this journey. I'm proud to be a woman running for president. This is going to be cleaning up the government, clearing out the deadwood and the political crony.
I don't feel no ways tired.
You can always tell when the Republicans are restless because the vice president's motorcade pulls into the Capitol and Darth Vader emerges.
I'm Hillary Clinton and I approve this message. What I try to do every day is figure out how to help somebody. You can't always pass the laws you want to pass right away. You can't snap your fingers and get people to cooperate. You have to work on that every minute of every day.
Your thought on this 20,000 troops surge?
Well, I opposed it based on what I knew about the situation before I went, and I'm even more strongly against it now because I think the chances for success are limited at best.
Stay, it will be trouble. So you gotta let me know. Should I stay or should I go?
There we go. There Hillary Clinton, nice, should I stay or should I go
by
the Clash?
Piece you put together there.
Yeah, we put that together right on the spot there. Totally
was,
dead. No preparation.
Very, very, very nice. I
that worked
that.
Very well. That worked wonderfully, wonderfully well.
For a second, I heard talking, it almost brought a tear to my eye.
It made...
Because I've never listened to the devil talk before.
It's true. It's true. That was the first. The devil.
Of course, she's not the real devil. We both know
well,
who the real
yes.
devil is.
We'll keep that a secret. Yes. We can't. We have to keep that hush. Okay. Guess what? You worried about high gas prices? I saw today $3.99 was the highest I've seen.
Mm-hmm. $3.95.
I know it. Up on, Ann Arbor Road. And, it could go even higher. Because there's this bill in the Congress, and I'll just read the story here, that James Inhofe out of Oklahoma is basically saying this is going to get gas up to even $8 a gallon. It's crazy, I know. He said the studies show it would – well, I'll just read this. Oil is trading at record levels in excess of $120 a barrel. Leading Republican Senators James Inhofe and Jeff Sessions of Alabama both told the Business and Media Institute energy prices would drastically increase if the Lieberman-Warner Climate Security Act – it's all about the climate – is signed into law. Quote, the studies show it would be directly affected – would be a $1.50 a gallon in addition to what it is today, Inhofe. I always call him Infant Ho. I don't know why. The ranking Republican on the Senate Environmental and Public Works Committee said, Inhofe spoke at a press conference at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C. on May 15th to introduce the We Get It campaign, a program funded by evangelical Christians that question the merit of global warming. Now, this little bill here, let's see what it would do. Let's see here. According to the Energy Information Administration, the average price of gasoline in Europe... I don't know why I just said that. Never mind. Let me...
All right. That's fair.
I'm trying to find the information on this bill here. It's a bill to direct the administrator of the Environmental Protection Agency, or the EPA, to establish a program to decrease emissions of greenhouse gases and for other purposes. Of course. What else? It's always about decreasing greenhouse gases, right? Isn't it? So, what happens when you try to decrease greenhouse gases? Well, you force car companies. Push them to the limit.
Yeah, well, and you know what they already have, because you know they passed that bill. Congress did. It says by year 2015, the average miles per gallon of every car sold has to be 35 or better.
Yeah.
Now how Chevrolet, Ford, and Dodge to design a truck that gets 35 miles per gallon and can still haul, like, a lot of people need trucks to haul in this country, that's like going to any doctor and saying, you know what, find the cure for cancer. Okay, it can't be done yet.
Yeah.
The technology doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
And I want them to know that they have destroyed the American automotive industry with that.
And because
you think it's bad now.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you have no idea.
Well, because in the Asian countries that are producing cars like a good Christian produces babies, they're not being pressured. I love that analogy.
Yeah,
oh,
that's a great one.
Off my head. They're not being pressured by their government to curb emissions or anything like none of that BS. They're not being forced to do all that stuff. It just doesn't happen. They have a lot more leeway. That's what our country is supposed to be. Mm-hmm. It's not supposed to be this government oversight. That's why we've been so prosperous with business in the past.
Yeah.
But now we're getting so we're choking. It's like slowly choking someone to death. It really is.
Yeah.
And it's funny because as they're trying to pass this BS environmental protection bill to save our planet by cutting emissions, which how many frickin' bills do we have to pass to cut emissions? I mean, this is like the 15th bill that we've declared to cut emissions by.
None of them are cutting emissions either.
Evidently not, because they keep going up and up and up.
Yeah.
They just defeated a bill to drill in Anwar on May 13th. The vote, an amendment to another bill, was killed by a vote of 42-56, largely along party lines. So it's like the Democrats, their idea of helping gas prices, because I say we're the part that's going to help gas prices,
right,
is by forcing, apparently, car companies to get better gas mileage.
And to put a tax on gasoline.
Yeah, and to put a huge tax on gasoline and all this stuff. While the Republicans...
We're going to make the price go down by adding 50 cents to each gallon.
That'll no. There.
Where's the logic?
I think the well. Here's the thing: is that the logic now on their side, and this is just what they believe, and I'm not saying it's right by any means, is that the higher gas price, the higher the price of gas is,
right.
the less demand there will be. Therefore, mm-hmm. price will eventually drop. Hey, I got news for
wrong.
You.
Wrong.
Yeah. China and India are making up our demand by a very wide margin.
Yeah.
So our demand going – it's like all these people who are like, well, if we boycott gasoline and we boycott the biggest oil companies, there'll be a price war. Wrong.
No.
They don't set the price of oil. Ooh, wrong. Because if our demand goes down, China and India are skyrocketing. Yeah. They'll make up for it.
You want to know why? Everybody was – I've heard – I can't count the number of people that number one blame Bush on the economy, and therefore, logically, it's Bush's fault that gas prices are so high. Yes,
exactly.
Okay, let's keep – because, you know, 10 years ago when Clinton was in office, gas was $1.92 a gallon. Well, you know, 10 years ago
– shit happens.
India and China hadn't gone through the most rapid industrial revolutions in the history of Earth, okay? China uses so much oil that they didn't used to that the demand is so high for it.
Yep.
The United States could stop using oil altogether, I think, and the price wouldn't fluctuate terribly.
Yeah. And it's not like – and as China's demand has gone up, it's not like the Saudi prince is pooping out oil over there.
Yeah.
All right? There's a limited amount, and it goes away. Now, the thing is, it's not like we are totally drying up of oil around the world.
Yeah, no.
We here have so much oil we could use, but we refuse to use it.
Yeah.
So the conservatives say – the Republicans, I should say – say, hey, here's an idea. Because the oil thing is supply and demand. There's not enough supply. Demand is increasing.
Right.
How about we create more supply?
It's logical.
Isn't that something? And if the Saudis aren't going to do it, and the Iranians aren't going to do it, and Canada and Mexico aren't going to do it because they're starting to dry up, we're sitting on a bunch of oil over here. How about we take a stand and do it?
Yeah.
And Democrats are like, no. We got to raise the price.
Far too logical.
Got to raise the price to lower
the
price.
It's kind of like Furbies when they first came out.
Okay, sure.
Now,
I'm waiting to hear this one.
Now, you'll remember.
I love Furbies.
I'm thinking of this as I go. Furbies, when they first came out, they were selling for what? Like $100 a piece. They were crazy.
They were crazy.
Stupid little.
They were crazy.
I don't even know what they were. They were like rabbit birds.
You could talk
something.
To it and it would say things back to you and it would remember what you said to it.
Was that what it was?
Something like
anyway,
that.
Anyway, the Furby.
It was worthless.
So everybody wanted the Furby and they were like $100, $150, $200 when they first came out. And then they said, well, you know what? They're selling like mad. We make more and more and more. And then they gradually, the price of the Furby fell and got so cheap that everybody bought them, and then they all had Furbies, and then nobody wanted a Furby anymore.
And where are Furbies now?
Furbies are, well...
in the trash.
In the trash.
Yeah, okay. No one has Furbies anymore.
So, moral of the story is, you make more, price goes down, people buy them, people are happy, and, life goes on.
Yeah.
So oil is like Furbies.
Yes.
Just to wrap that up.
Yes.
Okay?
This is quite the connection.
Isn't
quite
it,
the connection day.
Well, you made the reference to Christians making babies. I thought that I'd compare oil to Furbies.
It's true. And it's like I don't get it. It's like, and it's also they here's the justification for increasing the price of oil.
Mm-hmm.
The price of oil needs to be high, then we can create alternatives.
Time out.
Why can't we create alternatives while oil is really, really cheap?
No, despite the fact that I am completely and totally opposed to the global warming crap, I have absolutely no problem with alternative energy, you know? It's an undiscovered field in the future. I think it'll create jobs. I mean, it's new technology. New technology is going to completely and totally change our world.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I say it all the time. Chevrolet Volt, Toyota Prius, even though I hate Toyota. Those cars, fine. Buy them.
Yeah.
If you, I wouldn't buy a Prius because I want to save the Earth. Because if I don't do this, then we're all going to be cannibals in a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I would buy a Prius to save money.
Mm-hmm. Oh, totally.
If you want to save money, fine. I have no problem with that.
Yeah.
Buy a Ford Escape Hybrid if you have a bigger family and need some more room. But, you know, all this just like – it just seems like Congress and people all across the country, the world for that matter, are just in this panic state of mind that if we don't do something – you know, we only got 8 more years of oil on Earth. You know,
No,
we have oil. We have so much oil on this planet, we don't know what to do with it all.
And guess what? Fun surprise. Hybrids still take gas. People forget that. It's like people think that hybrids are just like immune to gas problems. No, they still take gas.
Yeah.
They just
less
use
it
better.
Yeah,
combine
it with electricity.
And what you were saying, you would buy a hybrid to save money. Glenn Beck, who, if you ever listen to him, and I love him. I listen to him all the time. Totally against global warming. Mm-hmm. Totally against that whole thing. Same as you and I.
Mm-hmm.
And he was talking on a show. he test drives cars for GM, and then he does spots for them. Mm-hmm. And he test drove, I think it was a Tahoe Hybrid or something like that. Mm-hmm. And he's going to buy it. Yeah. Not because he wants to save the earth, mm-hmm. but because the thing gets like 22 miles to the gallon, yeah. which for a Tahoe is right. unbelievable.
Yeah, that is, that. I mean, you can haul anything with that. You can seat more people and you can count.
How many people can you fit in a Tahoe? Like 55?
Or it's like a school bus. Are they Chinese?
Yes.
Okay. No, I think 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 8, 8 total.
Which is a ton
yeah.
of people.
Yeah. Yeah. That's
and that's good legroom for everybody.
Yeah, enough legroom and enough room for, you know, 98% of this country's, you know,
families. And to have that going 20 miles to the gallon.
Yeah.
Is mad. Yeah. It's
mad.
Great.
Yeah.
And then President Bush was in Saudi Arabia, mm-hmm. and he was talking, and he mm-hmm. said something that I hear this quote, and I say, you know, this is almost, I feel like it's too little too late. Mm-hmm. He said, quote, we've got to do, he said, well, first he said that if you increase the oil production just for the Saudis, it doesn't solve our problem. Mm-mm. He says the United States must act itself to help bring down mm-hmm. gas prices. We've got to do more at home, he says. Thank you. Someone in Washington understands, yeah. mm-hmm. you know, but I feel like it's just too little too late because, mm-hmm. You know, what's he going to do? He's yeah. got a couple months left, but he right. gets it. Mm-hmm. He understands that in order mm-hmm. for you can increase Saudi's oil production, whatever, because they're going to run out. Their oil mm-hmm. supply is getting low. Mm-hmm. So unless someone steps up to the plate and produces more, nothing's going to happen.
Right.
Because right. supply has mm-hmm. to be even with demand. Mm-hmm. It goes Furbies?
Furbies. Yeah.
If everybody wants a Furby, but you're only producing like 5 every year,
yeah,
I mean, that doesn't make sense. Right. You supply what the people want.
Yeah.
It's the same with the Wii. The Wii mm-hmm. came out, and everybody was – they slowly trickled it out, mm-hmm. and it created a ton of demand. Everybody wanted mm-hmm. – they slowly trickled it out, and then they bumped it up, yeah. and everyone had Wiis, and you could mm-hmm. buy a Wii. You could practically – they're practically giving them away.
Yeah. They're, you know, Target.
Yeah.
You know, you used to have to drive to Massachusetts to buy one.
Yeah.
No, they're all over the place now.
It's, yeah, exactly.
It's supply and demand.
It is supply and demand. You demand, mm-hmm. or you supply what is demanded. Mm-hmm. And see, here's a perfect example of people just not getting it. Mm-hmm. This idiot in Wisconsin, Brian LaFay, which is close to my name,
very
I have
close.
No connection with him. Excuse me. Couldn't care less how high gasoline prices climb these days. He's parked his pickup truck and is refusing to buy gas for a month, possibly longer.
Oh, no.
Oh, gosh. Shriek.
Well, geez. Well, I think that they just lost $22 billion. The oil companies just lost their $20 billion
profit. They're shaking in their boots. They just collectively pissed a puddle on their leather chairs.
Yeah.
The goal is to not use one drop of gas for 31 days, LaFay said, calling it his personal stand against the oil companies. Yeah, they're going to be very broken up.
Mark, because, you know, that entire month, they're going to lose, like, $220.
That's a lot for them. I mean, that is... I don't know how they're going to survive. He's riding.
Shut down the corporate office.
He is riding his bicycle or walking everywhere he goes. Mm-hmm. He won't even let his friends pick him up unless they already planned on being in the neighborhood. So if they're not going out of their way, I can take the ride, he said. But if they're going out of their way, then I'm still consuming gasoline. So it kind of defeats the purpose. But even if they're not going out of their way, you're still consuming gasoline.
Yeah, no kidding.
It's not like they just don't consume any. LaFay started this effort on May 11th. He bikes to his third job. Oh, I'm sorry, his third shift job, Aldrich Chemical in Sheboygan Falls, a 9-mile commute. I did like a practice run 2 days in a row to make sure I could do it. I'm not in the greatest shape. There's no picture of him, but I'm assuming he's fat mm-hmm. because he lives in Wisconsin.
And he drives a pickup truck.
Yeah. The mornings are the worst. It feels like it takes forever. I get like a mile down the road and I want to die. On a bike?
How hard could that be?
How much do you weigh?
Yeah, you just pedal a little bit and glide and kind of just coast.
You're on a tricycle to work every day?
Yeah.
But not okay. I like how he says this is the stand against the oil companies.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's really not.
No.
You giving up oil mm-hmm. is not doing anything. This is a joke of a stand up yeah. against the oil companies.
It is.
And what's wrong with the oil companies? Let's go over mm-hmm. this again. We have this really ignorant perception that they are the ones that are screwing us over mm-hmm. when their profits and the prices. One, the prices aren't set by them. Their profits are in line with what they should be with the mm-hmm. price of oil, mm-hmm. you know, whatever dollars a barrel.
Right.
And they employ hundreds mm-hmm. and hundreds of thousands of people and are owned by 99%, or at least
right.
ExxonMobil is,
right.
Shareholders.
Mm-hmm.
So how big and bad and evil are they really?
Not so much. Let me remind you of this. In terms of cost to, in an oil company's case, buy from the refinery and whatever, and to resell to you, you are being shafted a lot more by Coca-Cola than you are by ExxonMobil.
Yeah.
Okay?
Oh, we've said that before.
Their Coca-Cola's profit margin is ridiculous compared to the oil company.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's just that the oil companies sell so much of it. Yeah, fine, they make money. That's what this country, again, we've said it before, about. Is founded on.
Yep.
The right to own a business.
And it's like, it's Clinton who said that the oil companies have absolutely no business making all this money. Here's the clip right here.
Democratic Party is opposed to Anwar drilling. You voted against nuclear energy 7 times. And I'm saying to myself, both parties have sold the folks out on energy, and now the folks are getting hammered, and they should be angry at both parties. Where am I going wrong?
Well, here's what I think. I think there is plenty of blame to go around. We have not done what we should have done.
Even for you?
Oh, for all of us, for everybody.
Okay, so you're taking some blame.
But consumers, drivers, political officials, the oil companies, you name it.
So are you going to change your votes on drilling and nukes?
Well, here's what I'm going to do, and I've said this very clearly. In the short term, I do want a gas tax holiday, but to pay for it by putting a windfall profits tax on the oil companies.
Now, what does that mean, though?
Well, here's what
that means.
Now, look, what it means is that the oil companies have made out like bandits.
Right.
You know that.
Record
profits. We all know that, right? And there is no basis for them to have these huge profits. They're not inventing anything new.
I've never been so embarrassed.
It's a common problem.
I got turned down for a car loan.
A bad credit report can keep you from getting the things in your life you want and need.
A friend told me about LegacyLegal.com.
LegacyLegal.com can remove negative items on your credit reports, raise your credit scores, and get you back on track.
It was inexpensive and easy. LegacyLegal.com took care of everything. And I got my loan.
Get your free credit consultation at LegacyLegal.com.
Hey everybody, this is Jacob from The Current. I just want to let you all know of a new series we're doing called Teens in Politics. We're going to have a panel of 4 teenagers discussing teens in politics, who they support, and issues that are important to the youth of the country. All the candidates this year have acknowledged the fact that the teen vote is important to them this year. So join us on Saturday, April 26th for Teens in Politics and learn what teenagers believe and who they support in the upcoming election.
Hey, this is your kid's MP3 player. That's right, I can talk. You ever check out what your kid's listening to? I mean, blogs and podcasts and stuff like that. People are talking about everything you can imagine out there, and a lot of times there's drugs involved. I heard this one cat say weed makes you smarter because it makes your brain bigger. Now, you don't want your kid listening to fools like that. Come on now. I'm just saying that maybe talk to your kid and check out what he's loading up. Let him know you care, and maybe he'll think twice about drugs.
Listening, the anti-drug. Learn more at theantidrug.com. Sponsored by the ONDCP and the Partnership for a Drug-Free America.
Introducing Rick Devin's Old School, hits of the 60s and 70s. Baby, it's a wild world. Featuring Chet McCracken, formerly of the Doobie Brothers, and Chris Pinnock, formerly of Chicago. CDs and downloads are now available through Amazon.com, Apple iTunes, and more. For more information about Rick Devin's Old School hits of the 60s and 70s, visit rickdevin.com.
This guy at the office, he's always bragging about how often he gets Häagen-Dazs. I mean, I get my fair share of Häagen-Dazs, okay? But this guy, he says he gets it whenever he feels like it. After work? On his lunch break? At the office? Come on! He's got to be exaggerating. Nobody has Häagen-Dazs that often. Do they?
Our finest vanilla ice cream, surrounded with a rich milk chocolate coating. Häagen-Dazs ice cream bars.
Welcome back, everybody, to The Current. Logan was trying to unmute the mics, and he failed to unmute mine.
I can't press a button that's 12 inches away from me.
We're running really far behind, but who cares? We don't have a set time, so we'll just continue.
I had a Democrat moment.
What was that? Oh, being a stupid idiot?
Yeah.
Okay.
now, I will say, Jacob found this next door. He does all the planning for the shows. This story is really intriguing me. This is quite interesting.
I mean, this is something that... Well, this is... Oh, crap. Firefox just crashed on me.
Oh, my God.
Oh, Christ Jesus. Born in a manger on Christmas Day. Restore session, let's see here. So it's basically this guy got pissed off at his wife. His wife left him, mm-hmm. so yeah. He did what any other sane-minded person right. would do.
Absolutely.
Person, as they would say in the old days, the person who has all his, who is, you know, who is in who possession is of in all possession his faculties.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm.
Which, by the way, Keith Olbermann used that.
Mm-hmm. Judge Judy uses it all the time.
Yeah. Well, Keith Olbermann used it. I was watching some. It just crashed again. Keith Olbermann used it the other day, and I was like, has anyone used that since, like, the 1950s? Because that was in Anatomy of a Murder they kept using
that. Yeah, Anatomy of a Murder. That was the other place I saw it. I was wondering, why the hell did I hear that? I knew it was somewhere else.
Not in possession of all his faculties. Mm-hmm. Such a stupid slogan. Anyways, so Paul Osborne is his name. He kicked out wife Sharon and advertised her on the internet auction site eBay with bids hitting 500,000 euros, Jeez. Which is what, like...
$680,000, sure. roughly?
How do you...
I don't know. It was an absolute guess. Let's find
okay,
out.
Okay. It offered his, quote, cheating, lying, adulterous slag of a wife to the highest bidder and became an internet phenomenon, with users forwarding the link worldwide. But Sharon, 43, denies an affair, and cops are now investigating Paul for harassment. It's... Oh, the, the postage costs are free, which is the good news. And the picture of her on eBay, the starting bid was 1 cent. What is it?
I was off. It's 700 and basically 780,000.
You can buy a house for that. Why would you want? You could buy two houses for that. Why would you buy a really ugly woman for that money?
Kicked out of a house.
Here's the picture of her on eBay. She's like picking her nose
on a plane.
On a
That's
plane.
That's really classy.
I don't know what the heck that is. Anyways, dead of two. Paul, a dad of two. Excuse me, Paul of Belchley. London, said, quote, I started checking her emails and I realized the rumors were true. They had been discussing their sex life together and making plans for the future. I was absolutely destroyed. I gathered all her stuff in bags and dumped it in the drive, which is, I guess, British for driveway.
Yeah.
3 weeks ago, Sharon pleaded for Paul to take her back, but realized, and Paul, I guess, Paul to take her, realized it was the right thing to do. I was just, okay, I don't know where that
that's,
quote, that's weird. Anyways, Sharon and her colleague made a police complaint against Paul. Neither was available for comment last night, but the unnamed man's wife said at home in Hamel Hampstead, Hertz, there's nothing going on, they work in the same office, that's all. So, that's a really novel idea.
Yeah, that's different.
I kind of like it.
Hey, got an interesting thought for you. Why is it that we park on a driveway
but not
and drive on a parkway? Parkway?
I've heard that before. I don't know.
Isn't that something? Anyway.
Well, you drive up to... You drive on a driveway. I mean, you do.
Yeah.
You just... Sometimes you park on it. It depends. It's optional. It's really a wild card of roads. A parkway. You could park on a parkway if it was...
I suppose you could.
You
could get a
parallel
ticket.
Park. You could parallel park.
Yeah, that's a fine point.
Or you could just park on a road. Like, you know, I don't know. Whatever. Anyways, so if you've got a adulterous wife, stick her up on eBay and big bucks. Would he get that money? Because why would he get the money for her? He didn't. You know, birth
her.
Well,
she couldn't sell herself. That's prostitution.
No, but, exactly. Yeah, but would he give the money to her and be like, "Here's"? No, obviously he wouldn't.
Mm-mm.
Is this just like to recoup the?
I think you'd have to prove that she was his possession.
Which is impossible because no one
unless
possesses
she's signed a contract or something.
You own me.
To it.
That would be like a husband's like best. That'd be like a dream. You know what? You know what, husband? And because everyone calls it.
I want you to own me.
I want you to own me. Sign this contract, and they'd be like, "Oh my god, totally."
Yeah, there you go.
And then they sell you right around the corner for
clever idea though.
$1 million.
It's a very clever idea. Go ahead.
Nothing. No, go.
I was. Mine is extremely off topic.
I don't care.
Okay. I was wondering what happened to Free City in Denver Civic Center Park. We did a story a little while ago.
Well,
broke off from the country, and we're just going to take
That's going to happen. We'll do a follow-up, because that's going to happen during the Democratic Convention in July or something like that.
Okay.
So we'll definitely do a follow-up of Free City, because I definitely want to see how the naked people turned out.
Yeah.
I mean, not like...
right.
You know what I mean? Like how the naked concerts or whatever they were doing, naked everything.
Yeah, I think they were going to spell the word peace with naked bodies.
That's what it was. So they would really only need 5 naked bodies to do so, right? P-E-A-C-E.
I think that P would require, well, I don't know. You could do P.
I was thinking they'd write it on their chest and then just lay down on the grass. But I guess...
Oh, I thought that they were going to shape their bodies
That's probably what they're doing. That's really disgusting if they're going to be naked.
Yeah, laying together.
Oh, wow. That is going to be sick. Mm-hmm. Especially when they... Well, no.
Well, they won't be doing it for long. The police department will sweep them up pretty quick, I think.
Oh, yeah. With a street sweeper.
Public indecency.
You just drive a street sweeper right over them.
Yeah, there you go. I don't see anything wrong with
that. That sounds like fun.
Yeah. Absolutely. You know, it's an interesting idea. You know, you got to give them credit for creativity.
No.
Oh, how about that?
That's our cue.
That is.
This has been episode 96, the current Saturday, May 17th. Is it the 17th? No, it's not Saturday. It's Sunday. God damn, I wish it was Saturday.
Yeah, no
May 18th, 2008. Hope you all have a wonderful week. I'm Jacob Bodner.
And I am Logan Sparrow.
Adios, muchachos.
Auf Wiedersehen.